Tonight is October the 21st, and we are involved in Gog u'Magog in Yechezkel, Siman Lamed Ches, Perek Lamed Ches, chapter 38. We got up to Pasuk Zayin, verse 7 last time. And I have a lot to tell you about. I want to read some psukim, because if we don't read them now, I'm afraid we're going to get so involved in the discussion that we may not read any psukim. So, it's okay. Yeah. But then I have to prepare next week on the same psukim that I prepared this week. That's not, you know, it's not okay. Okay. So let's read a little bit over here. We introduced last week who the nations were that were with Gog. Remember, Gog is the king. He's the person who's leading this battle. Magog is the nation that, or the place that he's from, the land of Magog. And then you have a bunch of different nations listed with him, predominantly from Yefes, rather than from Shem. Predominantly from Yefes, a couple from Chum. we'll discuss that, I hope, this evening a little bit more, especially this week being Parshas Noach. We'll try to discuss a little bit about the three, Shem, Chum, and Yefes, which I'm sure many of you are still familiar with from the creation class. That would go back right now nearly 3 years, right?
Wow.
Okay. So the pasuk says in Zion, verse 7, Hashem says to Gog, Hikon v'hachem lecha, prepare yourself. Ata v'chol kehalecha, you and all of your group, your congregation, hanikalim alecha, that are gathered with you, and you, Gog, should be for them, for the rest of the army, as a mishmar, as a guard. Rashi says it's the way of the kings to pay attention to think about their soldiers, how they should go in, how they should go out, how they should be set up, the formations, the strategy, etc. So that's what it means. You should be for them as a mishmar. You should be involved in thinking about what to do over here, and how to attack the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Miyamim rabim tipakeid. From many days, you will be you will be remembered, which means I'm going to remember all the many days, Rashi says, that you sinned against me. Be'acharis hashanim, at the end of years, tavo el eretz mishoveves mecherav, you will come to the land that has returned from the sword. Mekubetes me'amim rabim, gathered from many nations. The Jewish people at that time of Gog u'Magog will have returned to Eretz Yisrael, as we mentioned last week. Under Mashiach ben Yosef, they will have returned to Eretz Yisrael. They will be anticipating the arrival of Mashiach ben David. They will be in the land that has returned from the sword, has been gathered from many nations. The exiles will have been gathered in to Eretz Yisrael. Certainly, we see that happening in front of our eyes. We haven't reached that point yet. Certainly, there's a long way to go, but there is an ingathering in Eretz Yisrael. That's going to happen, and at that point, then Gog is going to come against Eretz Yisrael. Al Harei Yisrael, on the mountains of Yisrael, Asher Hayu L'Charba Tamid, that had been constantly to the sword. That's where, not now, not at the time of Gog u'Magog, but that's what had been in the past. V'hi me'amim hutsa'a, and they had been taken out of the other nations. V'yashvu lavetach kulam, and they are dwelling in Eretz Yisrael, they're dwelling, all of them, securely in Eretz Yisrael. So Gog is going to lead the nations against the Jews who will be in Eretz Yisrael, living securely in Eretz Yisrael. V'alisa, now here I have a very important word, it has become important of recent times, V'alisa kashoa tavo, that's the source of that word. Shoa means darkness. That's what it means. And you will rise up. Kashoa tavo. You will come like darkness. Ke'anan, like a cloud. L'chasos ha'aretz tiyah, to cover the land. That's what you're going to be. Atavacha l'kapecha, you and all that are with you. Ve'amim rabim osach, and all the nations, all the many nations that are with you. So Gog is going to be leading this group. Again, we really mentioned it last week, but let's recall it, that at the end of days, and we don't know how soon this may be very soon, at the end of days, under Mashiach ben Yosef, the Bnei Yisrael will return to Eretz Yisrael. They will dwell securely in Eretz Yisrael, We can't say that's true today. There will be a security there. As we'll see, the security means that the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael are not going to have fortifications. They will not feel the need for fortifications at that time. They'll be living securely. Why will they feel secure? Because they will feel that they are under the protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they will feel fully secure in Eretz Yisrael. And it is at that, but Mashiach Medavid will not have come yet, which means the Beis HaMikdash will not have been rebuilt yet. We're not quite there. And that's when Gog is going to come with all of his multitude of armies, and I'm going to give you a descriptive account of what that army is going to look like soon. And that's when he's going to rise up against Eretz Yisrael. So, Pasuk Yod, verse 10. Kol Amar Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem God.
Skip 9.
Did I skip?
Skip 9.
No, that's Kasha Tova.
Oh, okay.
That was just it. Kol Amar Hashem Elokim. So says Hashem God. V'hayah bayomahu will be on that day. Ya'alu dvarim al levavecha. Words will enter your heart, you Gog. V'chashavta machashavas ra'ah. And you will think evil thoughts. What evil thoughts will he think? He will think, Rashi says, to make war against me, against Hashem. What is going to motivate Gog to gather all the nations of the world and come against Eretz Yisrael? What is the thing that's going to trigger this anger, this hatred that is going to come against Eretz Yisrael? He's going to be able, as we're going to see, as we mentioned really last week, but also we'll see later, he's going to be able to gather everyone together to come attack Eretz Yisrael. What is the thing that's going to trigger that? It's going to be the very fact that we are going to be living in Eretz Yisrael securely, and we're going to feel secure, not feel secure because of our armies, or because of our own might, or because of our own fortifications. We're going to feel secure under the protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gog won't be able to deal with that. That a nation is able to live securely with the notion that they are protected by God, Gog will rise up and attack the Jewish people. His attack will be not solely because he hates us. His attack will be because he hates Hashem. And we represent Hashem. And at that point, we'll be living in Eretz Yisrael with protection from Hashem. What's that?
Tranquility.
We will be completely... We will feel completely guaranteed. We're going to feel totally, totally secure. Gog is going to say, what kind of business is that? God is not going to help these people. And he's going to come and attack to show that Hashem is not so powerful. To show the Jews are not Hashem's people. It's going to be an attack which is against Hashem. And it's at that point that you're going to have this epic battle. Yeah.
At what point are we talking about where they are going to realize that their religions are not the real thing?
Well, I'm not sure. See, this is where it gets murky. I don't know, with Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, I don't know what the realization of the non-Jews is going to be at what point.
Because I'm wondering if that's part of the anger here, like, oh gee, I'm on the wrong side.
Right, it could be.
I've been in the wrong.
Well, it could be. That could
because
be.
All the other nations together around, it would seem like they would have to feel it personally.
Right.
To go to war.
Right, okay. So I'm going to read you a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which will enlighten us on this point. Let's get through some more from Sukkim, and then we'll go to the Gemaras. V'amarta, you, Gog, will say, Ele el eretz prazos, I'll go up to the land of the scattered ones. Prazos means cities that means people living not gathered together in cities. The reason why people traditionally live in big cities in times of fear and war is because the big cities have walls and they can be protected. Prazos means spread out without any protection. You're going to go up to the land of Prazos. It's going to anger you. It's going to eat at you that these people are Prazos. They're just spread out as if there's nothing to worry about, as if there's no need for protection. Avo hashoktim, I'll come against those who are serene, who are settled. Yoshvei la betach, those who are sitting with security. Kulam, all of them. Yoshvim be'en choma, dwelling without walls. Uriach udlasayim, and bolts and doors. Ein lahem, they don't have. He's not going to be able to tolerate that sense of security that the Jewish people are going to have.
I know you said Hashem put in the anti-Semitism as a way of keeping us together, but is that the reason that, I mean...
Keeping us together, keeping us serving Him, serving Hashem.
With the mitzvahs and all the things that resemble the Jewish people.
Yeah.
It's still like, I don't get it in my head, that like millions of people, what do they care what we do?
Okay.
I don't get it. I mean, they're busy with their gods and their
but we're,
and their traditions.
Okay.
Why would... What's going on here?
Good. Okay, so wait for the Gemaras. Okay. We're going to see. We're going to enlighten some of this. After we read, if you still have questions, then ask them that. But let's get through some more material here. Lishlol shalol. He's going to come to take the spoils. V'lavos baz. And another word for spoils. La'ashiv yadcha al charavos no shavos. To put your hand over the destroyed ones that have now been resettled. The destroyed land that has now been resettled. Eretz Yisrael. V'al'am me'usaf migoyim. And the land that has been, the nation that's been gathered from the Goyim, Ose, Mikne, Vikinyon, those who are doing cattle and business, Yoshve al Tabur Haaretz, dwelling on the midsection of the land. The Tabur is the word for the navel, the belly button on the body. Just like that's the midsection of the body, the Tabur Haaretz is a reference to Eretz Yisrael. It is the middle, it is the central place in the world. Shiva Udidon Visochare Sarshish, the Cholkifi Reha. These are different places. Shiva and Didon and the merchants of Tarshish and all of its villages. Yomulucha, they're going to say to you, Halishlol Shalah Tava, you coming to take spoils? Halavos Baz, to take another word for spoils. Hikalta Kalecha, you gathered your group. La Seis Kesef Izahav, to take silver and gold. La Kachas Mikne Vikinyon, to take the cattle and the what they have acquired. Lishlol shalal gadol, to take great spoils. Is that what you're coming for? Now they're going to be, they're saying this in an appreciative way. Oh, you're coming to take all of the gold and the silver, everything that they've gathered. Is that what you're coming for? They're going to be saying this in a mouth-watering way. Lachein hinavei ven adam, therefore prophesy, son of man, ve'amar to legog yishal senegog, ko'amar Hashem elokim sosas Hashem agad, halo bayomahu, it will be on that day, b'sheves ami Yisrael avetach, when my nation Israel will dwell in security, teda, you will know. At that point, you will know, the Rashi says, you will know the calamity that I have in store for you. Uvasa mimekomcha miyakesei tzafon, you will come from your place, from the far north. Ata you, v'amim rabim itach, and many nations with you. Roch ve'susim kulam, all of them riding horses. Kahol gadol, a great multitude, v'chayel rav, and a large army. Yolisa alami Yisrael, you will come up against my nation Yisrael, ke'anan, like a cloud, v'chasus arts, to cover the land. V'acharis hayamim, at the end of days, tiye, it will be, v'aviosicha al artsi, I will bring you to my land. Why do I want this to happen, says Hashem? Lemandas hagoyim osi, so the nations will know me, b'kadshi v'cha, when I become sanctified through you, laying a hem in front of their eyes, Gog, when I completely decimate, annihilate you and your army, I will become sanctified to all the nations. This is going to be the final battle between those who deny God and those who believe in God. This is going to be God squarely taking on all those who deny His existence. And He will totally and completely annihilate them to show that He does exist, and He will become sanctified through their destruction. Hashem will empower them to come against His nation who represents Him. And that will be the final point, the final stage that will show that we are His nation, He is our God, and that He exists, and it is through us that He is known in this world.
When they say horses, do they mean like horses or things that are horse-powered?
Well, we don't know, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, in Hebrew, it's like a car, how many horsepower?
Yeah, but horsepower, the term horsepower in English comes from horse.
Right.
Right.
In Hebrew, it's the same, or
well, it's just a translation. It's just a translation from English. I don't know how they do it. So I'm not sure. You're right. We're used to things that are mechanical, things that have motors and things like that. So I don't know. Does this mean that that today's horses will be the tanks and the stuff like that? Is that what it means? Or does it mean that somehow then we're not going to have those types of mechanical things that we have today? Maybe in a few short years, that sort of things we're not going to have. Who knows? We don't know. There's no way to know. We'll find out. It's Hashem. We'll find out. Okay, let's keep reading. I want to get to the end of the parak, and then we'll sum it up. There's still more. Next week we still have more. The parak Lamentes 39 is more about Gog Magog, but let's finish the parak this week. Komar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God. Ha Tohu, are you the one Asher Dibarti Biyamim Kadmonim that I spoke about in the earlier days? Biyad Avadai, in the hands of my servants Neviya Yisrael, the prophets of Yisrael. Hanibim, that prophesied by Amim Ahim Shanim in those days, in those years, Lahavi Oska Alehem, to bring you upon them. Are you the one that my Nevi'im were talking about? That's what Hashem's going to say to Gog. He's going to say, are you the one Yechazkel was talking about? Are you the Gog that my prophets were talking about? The Gemara here says that this word Shanim, years, can also be read as a play on words Shinayim, too, because there were two prophets who prophesied at the same time about Gog Magog, and I mentioned to you last week who they were. Remember?
Eldad
and Medad. This is a reference, a hidden reference to Eldad and Medad, Shnayim, two who prophesied about Gog Magog. They were the first ones to have that prophecy. We have not yet answered why they prophesied about Gog Magog at that time. That was one of the loose ends we left from last week. V'ha'yabayomahu will be on that day. Now, this Pasuk Yud Ches 18, this is where we begin reading the Haftorah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. It's from here, from Pasuk Yud Ches, and it goes into Perek Lamed Tes. As I mentioned to you, this year we didn't have a Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, so we didn't read it. Next year, Mitzvah Hashem, we will read it on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Okay, you know what? Let's stop here for now, because this is a good place. If we don't go any further this evening in the Pesukim, this is a good place. So the Pesukim are telling us that there's going to be this massive, massive battle led by Gog, and it will take place precisely after the Jews are in Israel and living securely without any man-made protection. That's when it will happen. Because that's the point that is going to absolutely make Gog seethe with anger to have such a nation in the world. Let me first read to you what his army is going to look like. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, I mentioned to you last week that there are three massive armies that were gathered in battle against the Jewish people in history. The first one, we will read next Shabbos, Parshas Lech Lecha, is the four kings against Avram Avinu. The second one is Sanherev, when he came against the king Chizkiyahu after he took the 10 tribes into exile. Then he came against the remaining tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin, and he was decimated. And the third is Gog Magog. So the Gemara here is describing Sanherev's army, and in describing Sanherev's army, we see what Gog's army is going to look like. The Gemara tells us, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Ba'alehem Sanherev HaRasha, Sanherev the evil one came against them, Barabayim V'chamisha Elef Ish B'nei Malachim, with 45,000 men who were princes, Yoshvim Bekronos Shalzav, sitting in chariots of gold, and it says what they had with them, Uvishmonim Elef Giborim, and with 80,000 strong men, Levushe Sirion, wearing armor, Sirion Klipa, wearing armor that was flexible armor, Uvishishim Elef Achuzei Cherev, and 60,000 holding the sword, Ratzim Lefanov, running in front of him. So far we counted 45,000, 80,000, and 60,000, which comes out to 185,000. V'hashar Prashim, and the rest were cavalry. 185,000 of those types of, the strongmen, the chariots, etc. And then the rest were cavalry. Now, what does that mean, the rest were cavalry? How much was the rest? And the Gemara says, V'chein bo'u al Abraham, that's the same amount that came against Abraham. V'chein asin in lavo im Gog u'Magog, and that's how many are going to come with Gog u'Magog. The Gemara says, the width of his army was 400 parsa. 400 parsi. 400 parsi. Now, a parsa is for meal. A meal is 2,000 amos. So a parsa is 8,000 amos. So 400 parsa, you have to multiply 400 times 8,000, which is 3,200,000, right? And that's amos. And ama is at least a foot and a half. Between a foot and a half and 2 feet. So let's take the conservative estimate of a foot and a half.
400 times 8,000 is 3,200,000.
400
times 8,000.
You're right. It's 3,200,000. Right, right. And then add and then make that that's amos.
Amos.
That's amos. So then in feet that will be at least 4,800,000 feet. So let's take 5,000,000 feet. Now 5,000,000 feet.
Oh goodness.
Right.
5 million feet? We can't even imagine it.
Well, we're talking several, you know, a lot of miles. It seems impossible. But
5 million feet of army? The breadth of the army. Oh, the breadth of the army.
Yeah.
What about the depth of the
army? Yeah, I don't know. Oh my God. I hope I'm doing this right. 400.
What length in cavalry? Quite honestly, the Chinese were that big. Yeah. The Chinese army, because they only had weapons for their front row, too. And they would just keep moving them up as the front guys died. They'd pick up their weapons and go forward. So I can't imagine that because that's the way the Chinese did.
Look, I mean, World War One,
right.
there were millions of soldiers mobilized in Europe. Millions.
Right.
Millions and millions.
Right.
And certainly World War Two. So, I mean, you know, that's what we're talking about over here.
But, you know, the soldiers with all that armor must have been a very scary sound.
Yeah, well, it says...
It
says here the entire...
Coming with all those swords and that sound.
The horses,
right?
Too.
And the whole... Oh, my gosh. It
says...
It says here,
and that the total amount of his army is Masayim Beshishim Ribo Alafim, which would be 200. Now it's hard to translate this. 260 ten thousands. Now I don't know if it's now 260 ten thousands is 2,600,000. That's a large army, but we've seen armies like that. I mean that was the World Wars had armies like that. Not total. Each country mobilized millions and millions of people in their armies. I mean, it was just, you know, huge amounts of soldiers. So 2,600,000 is a large army, but we've seen armies like that. I don't know what it means. 10,000 thousands. See, I'm not sure what that means. Whatever it is, we're talking about a lot of people. The 185,000 the Gemara says are going to be the officers. The officer corps will be 185,000. Men, but the whole army will be over 2 million people. So that's the army that came against Avraham Avinu that he destroyed. That's the army that came against Chizkiyo in time of Sancheirav, and that's the army that Gog is going to bring with him against Eretz Yisrael.
Well, Avraham had
people
in Avraham. Yeah, Avraham hardly had any people with him.
Yeah, can't answer that question. That I don't know. Okay, now this battle of Gog u'Magog is also described in Zechariah. The main discussion of Gog u'Magog is here in Yechezkel. But in Zechariah, in Perek Yud-Dalet, the 14th chapter of Zechariah, which is the last chapter of Zechariah, the battle of Gog u'Magog is described as well, in less detail. There are certain details that are mentioned in Zechariah that are not mentioned in Yechezkel, but overall it's less detail. This is the Haftorah for the first day of Sukkot. So Sukkot revolves around Gog u'Magog. And we did read this on the first day of Sukkot. Now I'm going to read you just a few psukim from here. I know you don't have it in front of you, but I just want you to hear the pieces that we're missing from Yechezkel. It says here, Hinei yom bala Hashem, behold, a day will come to Hashem. Rashi says, what do you mean a day will come to Hashem? A day that Hashem is waiting for, that's precious to Hashem. V'chulak shalech b'kirbeich. And your spoils will be divided up inside of you. The spoils you will get from you, the Jews, will get from the armies that will attack you, you'll divide them up inside of you. V'asavtiyas kol ha'goyim el Yerushalayim. I'm going to gather all the nations to Yerushalayim v'amilchama for war. V'nilkida ha'ir. The city will be conquered. V'nashasu ha'batim. The houses will be destroyed. V'hanashim tishachavna. And the women will be molested. V'yatzach ha'tzi ha'ir ba'gola. And half the city will be brought out into exile. V'yeser ha'am. But the rest of the nation, lo yikares min ha'ir, will not be taken out of the city. V'yatza Hashem, and Hashem will come out, v'nilcham ba'goyim ahem, and he will fight against those nations, k'yom yilachamo b'yom kerov, like the day that he fought at the Yam Suf, like the day that he fought at the Kriyas Yamsuf, at the splitting of the sea. There's going to be that sort of battle here as well. Now, why will there need to be that the city is going to be conquered? Why does that have to happen? Rashi explains, if that wouldn't happen, then the nations could claim that we didn't come to do battle. We came to worship. We're not here to battle. We're here for good reasons. Hashem is going to let them have some success before decimating them. That's what the pasuk means over here. And the psukim go on to explain that there's going to be geographical changes. There's going to be some momentous changes in the landscape around Yerushalayim. Mountains are going to move, are going to break apart. There's going to be all kinds of different types of things happening over there. And Hashem is going to absolutely annihilate those that are coming against us. The psukim here in Zechariah go on to describe what happens afterwards having to do with how bright the light is going to be and things of that nature which have to do with Tchias HaMesim, which is beyond the scope certainly of what we're talking about now. So, what is the backdrop to this whole thing? We've already described that the Jews are going to be in Eretz Yisrael, living peacefully and also securely. But there's more to it. And let me share with you what the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah concerning the end of days. Now, the end of days, of course, what does the end of days mean? Does it mean Tchias HaMesim? Here we mean at this time where we are approaching the time of Mashiach. So the Gemara tells us that there is a statement, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, those of you who are well versed in Tehillim, the second chapter of Tehillim, the pasuk says, Yoshev Bashamayim Yishak, he who dwells in the heavens will laugh. That's what the pasuk says. He who dwells in the heavens will laugh. He will, that word laugh means to mock. He will laugh in mockery at his creatures. The Gemara says, only one time will Hashem laugh at his creatures in mockery. Normally Hashem, when he laughs with his creatures. This is one time, and only one time, that he will laugh in mockery against his creatures. Which time is that? So there's two versions in the Gemara of when this will happen. One is, the Gemara tells us that at the end of days, Hashem is going to judge everybody. This means after the point that we're discussing now. Hashem is going to judge all the nations of the world, and he's going to find all of them lacking, all of them wanting, because they didn't keep the seven mitzvahs, they rejected Hashem. So the nations of the world are going to try to defend themselves, and they're going to say, no, we didn't know any better, and Hashem's going to say, yes, you did know better, and they're going to go back and forth. But they're going to try to defend themselves, and the Gemara shows how their defense is going to be undermined. It's not going to work. But Hashem says, even so, I'm still going to give you another chance. I'll give you one more chance. And Hashem is going to give them one mitzvah to do. I'll give you one mitzvah. You're nodding your head. There's a famous, everybody talks about this on sukkahs, because what's the one mitzvah?
You have to sit in the sukkah, but it'll be sukkah. So hot,
okay.
They're going to kick their sukkah.
Good, excellent. Okay, that's this Gemara here. He says, I'm going to give you a mitzvah to do. Go do this mitzvah. And if you do this mitzvah properly, then I'll say you're like the Jewish people. You're like my people who stuck with me. So they're going to go out, and they're going to build sukkahs on top of the roofs, and they're going to go up there and sit in their sukkahs, and Hashem is going to make it incredibly hot, hotter than in the land in the summer. It's going to be incredibly hot. And it's going to be so hot that you can't sit in the sukkah. And they're going to walk out of the sukkah, and they're going to kick the sukkah on their way out. So the Gemara says, so Hashem's going to say, you see, you don't deserve what the Jewish people deserve. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? If it's very hot, you don't have to sit in the sukkah. They're potter from sukkah because they're mitzdar. They're in pain. You don't have to be in the sukkah. The Gemara says, you're right, but you don't kick it on your way out. Mm-hmm. They're kicking it on the way out. What does that show? It shows they're not really sincere. It shows it's only skin deep. It shows it's insincerity. They don't really mean it. They don't really want to serve Hashem. They're not really interested in serving Hashem. When a Jew can't sit in the sukkah because it rains, he walks out of it feeling bad. He walks out of it feeling sad. Mm-hmm. Nebuch, we can't sit in the sukkah. We have this wonderful mitzvah which we could have for 7 days, and it's just a question of walking into it, and I can't do it because it's raining. I can't do it because it's too hot. I can't do it because there are too many mosquitoes. I don't like that. I wish that it would be okay. But the Goyim, they're going to walk out. Ah, who needs it? That's the way they're going to walk out. Proving they're insincere. Yeah.
Is this at the point where the moon has become a sun?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how those events play out. But it is at the point after the events we're describing with Gog and Magog, because this is the judgment that Hashem is going to have on the whole world. So at that point, this is one version, that's when Hashem will laugh in mockery at his creatures for their insincerity. That's one version. What's the second version of the story? Second version of the story is that when Mashiach comes, or around the time Mashiach comes, then the nations of the world, many of the people of the world, many of them will come, and they will attempt to convert. But they won't be allowed to convert, because we don't accept converts at that time. Because why don't we accept converts at that time? Because what a prerequisite.
Everyone knows that you could never be a convert, right?
Right. It's more than that. In order to convert, we have to know that you're sincere. A convert has to convert with the knowledge that things are not so rosy. If the Jews are on top of the world, who wouldn't want to convert? That doesn't prove anything. That's why they did not accept converts in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. The days of Shlomo HaMelech, every Jew was wealthy, every Jew was secure, the nation was powerful, we were on top of the whole world, so they didn't accept converts, because who wouldn't want, that doesn't prove anything, because they want to convert. You want to convert in pre-war Europe, that meant something. Who would want to be a Jew? No one wants to be a Jew. The Jews were kicked and beaten and spat upon and were impoverished. Someone wants to be a Jew at that time, that proves something. We don't accept converts when we can't prove their sincerity. Today, we still accept converts, but you realize it's very difficult to prove sincerity today. There are some very sincere converts and wonderful people who have joined our people, but it is a very tricky thing for the rabbis who perform conversions. It's very tricky today, because even though we're not like Shlomo Melech's time, but certainly we're not like pre-war Europe, and there's a lot that we have to offer that people are attracted to, and it's very difficult to ascertain sincerity. It's a challenge today.
Is that why it takes so long for converts to convert?
And that's part of the reason. That's also why a lot of rabbis don't do it. Because they're afraid. They're afraid that, how do I know this person's really sincere? They can appear sincere, they can look, you know, but you don't really know. Now we know, sitting around the table, we all know plenty of converts who are wonderful people. And certainly wonderful, staunch Jews. But I think we also all know examples where it didn't go so well. And it's a very tricky thing. It's a very tricky thing. But at any rate, at that time, once the Jews are sitting securely on our land, once we're in Eretz Yisrael sitting securely, we're not accepting converts anymore. But the Gemara says that these goyim who are going to come to convert, even though we're not going to accept them, they're going to attempt to act Jewish. Because they want so much to be Jews. And they will put on tefillin, and they will put on tzitzis, and they will try to mimic the Jewish people. Then Gog is going to come on the scene with his huge army, and these Goyim who had come to convert, who put on their tefillin and put on tzitzis, they're going to rip their tefillin off their heads, they're going to rip their talis off their bodies, and they're going to join Gog in his fight against the Jewish people. And at that point, Hashem will laugh in mockery at his creatures. What's the similar thread over here? The common denominator between the two versions? The mockery is against the insincerity. When their insincerity is exposed for what it is, then Hashem will mock them. the point that Gemara is trying to make over here is that the defining difference between the Jew and the Goy is the sincerity of the Jew and the insincerity of the Goy. Again, like we mentioned last week, we're not talking about every single Goy over here, of course, and we're also, unfortunately, not talking about every single Jew. But the vast majority of Jews and the vast majority of Goyim, the difference is going to be the sincerity versus the insincerity of worshipping HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gog will, at the end of days, manage to gather all of the nations together to come attack the Jewish people. And Hashem, at that time, will encourage him, will allow him to get his way a little bit in order to prove what they really are about. If they would come up to Yerushalayim with this huge army and Hashem would stop them right there, they would argue, what are you stopping us? What, Hashem, what are you attacking for? We were just coming to worship. We weren't coming to attack. Oh, these swords? No. They were, to chop wood for the Mizbeach, for the altar. But the horses? No, we weren't coming to hurt anybody. They will claim sincerity. And Hashem wants to expose their insincerity. So he will let them make inroads into Yerushalayim, and then he will annihilate them. And that will be his goal at the end of days. Yeah, go ahead.
Why do the women have to suffer already and half the Jews have to leave the land before their insincerity shows?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what those psukim mean. I don't know if they're literal or not. I remember once seeing that somebody saying that those words are not literal as they appear to be. Or they're not necessarily literal. But I don't remember where I saw it. So I don't want to advance anything.
They say you don't want to be alive during the War of Gog and Magog.
Right, that's
so it must be something horrific if we don't even want to be alive.
That's right.
Why does it have to be so horrific for the Jews if they are worshipping Hashem and they're in the land? Like, why?
Right. So this is a tough pill to swallow. It's a very bitter pill to swallow. The bottom line is that the events that are going to happen, the purpose of the events is to sanctify God's name. That's the purpose of the events. And we as Jews know that we are called upon to give up anything and everything in order to sanctify Hashem's name. That is our purpose in this world. Whether that means death, whether that means suffering, whatever that means, we are called upon to accept it upon ourselves in order to sanctify God's name. If that's what it takes to sanctify God's name, then we accept it. Now that's a very, very tough thing to do, but that's what our ancestors have done. We, thank God, haven't been called upon in that way, but we know that it might happen and we will have to rise to the challenge. It seems that at this point in time of Gog and Magog, some of the Jews, not all, will be called upon to suffer in order to sanctify God's name. They will be rewarded for the suffering, of course. But nevertheless, it does seem that there will be some level of suffering. And that seems to be why the Gemara says that it is a very difficult time, the time of Gog and Magog. We mentioned last week that there is a way to protect oneself from that suffering. Who remembers?
Shabbos.
Keeping the three meals of Shabbos. Shalosh Shabbos. That's what it is. By the way, the third thing, remember I told you the three things you're protected from, the three meals, and I was stalling last week. Do you remember with the third one? So it's the three things are, we mentioned last week, Chevele Mashiach, the birth pangs of Mashiach. We mentioned last week the war of Gog and Magog. And the other one was Dina Shel Gehenim. Was whatever that means, but something about Gehenna as well. So, whatever that is. But all this suffering that takes place, one is protected from if they sanctify Shabbos. And that, perhaps we'll talk about that briefly in a moment. Okay, we had other questions. Yeah?
So, does that also mean that the non-firm Jews or non-observant Jews, they're going to see also that Hashem is, that the word of Hashem is correct?
Yes.
And that the Torah that's been denied, are they also going to laugh at them, or is there some sort of a hedger?
I don't remember that we don't hold accountable a Jew that had no way of knowing better. Itino Shanishma, we don't hold them accountable. So I don't know, there are some non-firm Jews who do know better out there, and there's many who don't. We certainly are not going to judge. and we accept everybody, and we're not going to pick and choose. Hashem knows the truth. Hashem knows what's in everybody's heart. And Hashem knows which of them had no way of knowing, and which of them really could have done better and rejected. So it's not for us to judge. We're talking the end of days over here, and our Kadosh Baruch Hu will decide.
So when you say the Mashiach Ben Yosef will have gathered them, he'll be leading them this time. So the people will not really have been. They won't really recognize Hashem. I mean, in other words, the Jews will not have yet.
It's tricky. In Yechezkel, there's a reference to that some Jews who are apparently living outside of Eretz Yisrael will be forced to fight on the side of the Goyim. So I don't know. These are details which I don't know. And as I said at the outset last week, a lot of this we just don't know, and we just have to, wait and see what happens. And speculating too much is not worthwhile. The rejection that they're going to have of Hashem is going to be a rejection that they're going to try until the last minute to say they're not rejecting Hashem. Hashem is going to have to let it happen in order to show that they really are rejecting Hashem. Now, I want to just digress for a moment before there's one more point we have to make over here in Yechezkel, but before we do that, I just want to digress for a moment about Shalosh Shuras and Shabbos and being protected from the Chevelei Mashiach and Gog Magog, and it fits into this theme of sincerity. You see, there are many mitzvos that we do. Many, many mitzvos. Some mitzvos are easy, and some mitzvos are hard. Some mitzvos are quote-unquote fun, and some are not so fun. I don't think anybody really enjoys fasting on Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. We do it. Sometimes we have an easy fast, but I don't think anybody really enjoys it. Most people enjoy Simchas Torah. Most people enjoy it. Not everybody. Most people enjoy it. Most people enjoy sitting down to a good meal. Not everybody. But the vast majority of us, I think, enjoy sitting down to a good, especially Shabbos Yom Tov meal. That's something which I think we all, most of us, appreciate. Eating can be a mitzvah. And when it's a mitzvah, it's okay to enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying it. It's not only is nothing wrong with it, that's what Hashem wants. Hashem wants that we should enjoy the Shabbos meal. That's why He gave it to us. But it's a mitzvah to enjoy it. Now, what makes it a mitzvah? What makes the Shabbos meal a mitzvah? What makes the Shabbos meal a mitzvah is that we do it because it's a mitzvah. We don't sit down to a Shabbos meal on a Thursday. We sit down to a Shabbos meal on a Shabbos. That's what makes it a mitzvah. There has to be some way that a Shabbos meal is special for Shabbos. And we do. We make Kiddush, we have Challah, and most of us will serve certain foods, like Chalant or something along those lines, that are special for Shabbos. It is appropriate to try not to have a meal during the week that is like Shabbos. That's appropriate. Unless, of course, it's a Sudas Mitzvah, like a wedding. A wedding is supposed to be like a Shabbos meal, or even better. That's the mitzvah. But unless it's a Sudas Mitzvah, it is appropriate to eat when it's not for a mitzvah in a more diminished way than we would eat for a mitzvah. Because if we eat during the week, the way we eat on Shabbos, what makes Shabbos any different? What makes Shabbos special? What makes it a mitzvah? So there is this idea, and I think most of us do this, but there is this idea. I want you to know that for me, and I'm not bashing anything over here, I grew up with this as well, but for me, this is really the difficulty with a Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. There's no real issue. What's wrong with Thanksgiving? There's nothing wrong with Thanksgiving dinner. But for me, and I grew up with it, my family had Thanksgiving dinners all the time. We had it once a year. But But for, and for most of us who would have a Thanksgiving dinner today, it's because we have relatives who celebrate it, and we want to be able to do to or friends, and we want to be able to socialize with them, and it's a way that sometimes we can socialize with people that we otherwise wouldn't be able to, and that's all fine and good. What always bothered me once I got older about Thanksgiving is to have a big meal Thursday night, which is like a Shabbos meal, and then the next night, what makes it any different?
Challah.
So, you know, I'm just pointing out, to me, it grated against. Like, what is the point? You know, that was bothering me. Of course, anybody who does have a Thanksgiving dinner absolutely should never, ever serve the leftovers Friday night. That would be completely inappropriate. That, for sure. One should never do that. Don't make Friday night secondary to Thanksgiving. Right. That for sure is should not be done. But at any rate, so eating is a mitzvah, and sometimes, and it should be. there are people who will not eat certain foods except on Shabbos. That they will never eat certain foods except on Shabbos or at a Sudas mitzvah. That they'll be very careful. They won't eat certain foods except on Shabbos. Some people will not have dessert except at a Shabbos meal okay, you're shaking your head. Or a Sudas mitzvah. There are people who do that. And it makes Shabbos inherently special. Most of us, we come into Shabbos Friday night. Most of us come in hungry. And it's a mitzvah to come in hungry. You're not supposed to eat a large meal Friday afternoon because you're supposed to come in hungry. And most of us do. And most of us eat heartily on Friday night. Most of us eat well on Shabbos day as well, even though most of us are not as hungry Shabbos day as we are Friday night. Some people are. But many people are not as hungry Shabbos day as they were Friday night. However, you should know that Gemara says that one should make their Shabbos day meal better than their Friday night meal. That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is that the Shabbos day meal, the kavod of Shabbos day, is supposed to exceed that of Friday night. I once asked a Rebbe of mine in Baltimore, how do we fulfill this? We have these large meals Friday night. How is Shabbos day any more than Friday night? So he told me he thinks that we're yotze because of chalat. That's the way that we manage to fulfill that. Because thank God we're able to afford and have nice meals both Friday night and Shabbos day. But Shabbos day should be the better meal. If you have one special thing to serve at one or the other meal, it should be kept for Shabbos day. Most of us come to Shalosh Shudas not very hungry, especially in the Shabbosos we're about to hit. After the next 2 weeks, after Parshas Lech Lecha, move to Parshas Vayera, and they move the clocks back, it's going to be difficult. Shalosh Shudas is that meal which you come into, and I'm not hungry. Who wants to eat now? Like, who can think about eating? That's the sense people have. Now, in the Mishnah Berurah, he does write that if you know you're not going to be hungry for Shalosh Shudas, it is appropriate to try to eat a little less at lunch to make sure to save some room for Shalosh Shudas. But let's forget about that for a moment. Most everybody can eat something at Shalosh Shudas, even if we're not that hungry. What I like about Shalosh Shudas is that most of the time, eating at Shalosh Shudas is a real mitzvah. Because I'm not doing it because I'm hungry. I'm not doing it because I really want to eat. I'm doing it because the Torah said to have this meal. It's one of the few times when you're eating because you're supposed to, not because you want to. That's a very special type of eating. Because most of the time, that's not why we eat. Most of the time, even the matzah on Pesach night, you're famished when the matzah comes along. Right? So, if you had your choice, you wouldn't have matzah, you'd have something else, but you have to eat. You're hungry. So you eat the matzah. So most of the time, even the matzah, we're eating because we're hungry. The afikomen, there, most people eat because they're supposed to. Right? The afikomen already, nobody really wants to eat. And that's a true mitzvah over there. So I'm not saying the other ones aren't mitzvahs, but it's a bigger mitzvah when the motivation is only because Hashem said so. It seems to me that what the Gemara is telling us when it says that one who keeps the three meals is saved from Gog u'Magog, it seems to me that that's the idea over here. Because since the whole point of Gog u'Magog is to expose insincerity, When we eat challah shudis, even though we're not hungry, we are showing sincerity. We are showing that we are serving because Hashem said so. Not because it's fun, not because we enjoy it, not because we're hungry, not because the food tastes good. We're doing it because Hashem said to do it. Now, of course, we're allowed to make the food taste good, and we're allowed to eat good things, but we're doing it because Hashem said so. More than the other two meals. And if you skip one of the other two meals, then it's not challah shudis. Right? Challah shudis is only after you had a good meal Friday night. You had a good meal Shabbos day, and it's only an hour later. And now it's time for challah shudis. There, you show your sincerity. Yeah.
What is the actual requirement? Because I've heard differences. If you're not, if you can't, don't think you can have, you know, enough bread that you can have a fruit or
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
So what is the real requirement?
Okay, there are different opinions. Everybody agrees you can fulfill challah shudis without bread. Everybody agrees. Let's start the other way. Everybody agrees it is best to have bread. Everybody agrees. You can fulfill challah shudis according to everybody with mizonos. Eating enough mizonos that you can make a bracha achrona, then everybody agrees that's okay. So a piece of cake or some cake or some cookies or crackers or something like that would be acceptable for challah shudis. There is a discussion of whether you can fulfill your obligation of challah shudis with a fruit, with an apple, an orange, or something like that. There are opinions that say you can. Personally, I try to wash for challah shudis, but if you're not able to do that, you don't have to. You can be out, say, with mizonos. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that Lecha Mishnah is there. And
Lecha Mishnah also, it is not required, but it is meritorious mm-hmm. to have Lecha Mishnah if you can.
So I heard that you should eat fish during Shabbos.
Yeah, well, see, fish has always been, in Halacha, has been thought of as a very special food. So it's not so much fish for the sake of fish, it's because it's considered to be a very good food.
Has that anything to do with the Levithian?
It could. It could be the Leviathan.
Even the time to come?
Yeah, it could be. The buying fish for Shabbos was such an embedded thing amongst the Jewish people that there was a time when the fish merchants jacked up the price because they knew they had a captive audience.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of Anyway, so at that time the Rabbanim made a rule that no one should buy fish for Shabbos.
No.
They had no fish for Shabbos.
Why? Because
so the prices would come down. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not worth it to impoverish everybody just to have the fish for Shabbos. So they cut out the fish until the prices came down.
So I just want to clarify, because on the summer Shabbases, what we do is we have dairy with like special chocolate milk or whatever that they don't normally get. So dairy is okay. There's nothing about
no, 100% fine. Yeah, 100% fine. Especially if it's something that you don't normally have. That's especially good.
And what about Malava Malka? How is that also?
Yeah, so Malava Malka is the reverse. In the winter months, Malav Malka is very easy to do because Shabbos ends so early, so often, you know, several hours later, you're hungry. You know, summer months, Malav Malka is a real challenge, right? Shabbos, you just said. So, the Malav Malka is not spoken about in the same way as Challah Shudis, because Challah Shudis is a mitzvah from the Torah to have Challah Shudis. Malav Malka is a very important concept. But you're not violating anything by not having Malav Malka. Personally, my wife and I both are very makbid to make sure we have Malav Malka. Blin Eder, we're always careful to have it. There are some nice things said about someone who is careful with Malav Malka. And I feel the same way about Malav Malka as I do about Challah Shudis. When you're eating Malav Malka, most of the time, it's because you're supposed to, not because you're really that hungry.
And you're supposed to have bread.
So it's harder to be Yotzei Malav Malka. Ironically, it's harder to be Yotzei Malav Malka than it is to be Yotzei Challah Shudis. Everybody agrees you can't be Yotzei Malav Malka with just fruit.
So you have to have bread or mizonos?
I'm not sure. I think I have to look it up. I think mizonos is acceptable. I think so. But everybody agrees fruit won't work. Fruit might work for Challah Shudis, but it won't work for Malav Malka.
It seems
that seems funny.
Yeah.
Saying that the Shoshus is more important.
Right. Right. It does seem, it's ironic. It's ironic that that's the case.
I'm trying to make it easier for us to keep it.
Could be. It could be. I know that Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, for example, is very careful with Malav HaMalka. I haven't...
When he was here, I saw him very... He said, Malav HaMalka, Malav HaMalka. I remember he was here for something.
I know an account, a friend of mine, was... we were at the Torah Masorah Convention. One time I ever went to the Torah Masorah Convention, and Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky spoke at the Malav HaMalka there. And then this friend of mine drove him to Philadelphia. It was in New York, and they drove him to Philadelphia after the Malav HaMalka. Rav Shmuel didn't eat at the Malav HaMalka. I think he wasn't hungry, or he was speaking. He didn't have a chance. He didn't eat anything. So he drove Rav Shmuel to his house in Philadelphia. My friend lived in Baltimore. But it was already 2 in the morning when they got to Philadelphia. And Rav Shmuel told him, sleep here, and you'll go on in the morning. You'll go on to Baltimore. So he slept at the Kamenetsky's house that night. So they came in. But before Rav Shmuel and he went to bed, Rav Shmuel took him into the kitchen. They took out some matzah. They washed.
Aww.
And ate Malav HaMalka at 2 in the morning before going to sleep. So he's careful of Malav HaMalka. At any rate, so I'm just plugging this idea of eating when we aren't really interested in eating. I know everybody does this. I'm not chas v'shalom. I'm not being judgmental. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm not trying to. But I also it bothers me when people say, oh, do we have to eat again? Which everybody does that, right? It's a very common thing to do, right? We have to eat again. But it's a mitzvah. I don't want to be like kicking the sukkah. You know what I'm saying? I don't want it to be like that. It's a mitzvah. So we shouldn't have that reaction. Our reaction should be, okay, I'm not interested. I'm honest. I'm not interested in doing it, but Hashem said to do it, I'm going to do it. Just like I'm not interested in fasting on Yom Kippur. But I do it because Hashem said to do it. So, that's all, but it shouldn't be like with disdain. It shouldn't be that way. So, one last okay. It's really time. One last thought. One with this. So then, how does this tie in to Eldad and Medad? Why were Eldad and Medad? Why did they prophesy about the war of Gog Magog? Remember, they were talking about when the quail came and with Moshe and Yehoshua. What do they have to do with Gog Magog? What is it? Here we have a reference to them. Shnayim. They were the first ones to talk about it. Why there? Why then? So here, yeah.
It's sort of the same thing. Hashem allowed the quail to come. He allowed the Jews to eat. And then he said, okay, gotcha. I mean, it's kind of the same.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, good. You want to show the insincerity over there as well. They were complaining about food.
Right.
Okay, could be. Could be you're right. I saw Rabbi Eisman brings the Maharal, who says that the reason why they referenced Gog Magog over there is because that's where Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem for help, that he can't lead the Jews by himself, and Hashem gave him elders to help him. How many elders? 70 elders. Why are there 70? Why is the Sanhedrin 70?
Like
the nations of the world, exactly. The Sanhedrin represents the totality of humankind, of the human beings, of the world. 70. Precisely at that point, when Moshe Rabbeinu has been given the 70 who will be under him in judging the Jewish people, really judging the world, being the Sanhedrin, it is at that point that Eldad Umedad have a prophecy about Gog Magog, because Gog Magog, that's going to be the final thrust of the nations of the world to try to finally undermine Hashem. It's going to be the last attempt, and it's going to be an incredible attempt, a huge, momentous attempt, and it will finally be decimated. That's the final point when the nations of the world will attempt to undermine Hashem.
When you were saying the two points where Hashem would be mocking them, the first one reminded me of the Tower of Babel, because that's another time when they all got together,
right,
united to go against
70
Hashem,
nations.
Right? And the time when, if they're insincere, to me that's like the era of Rav. Does this kind of like correct those mistakes in a way?
It might.
Or is it just repeating them?
It's interesting. It sounds like it's repeating them. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like it's repeating them. But I don't know. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I'll get your question in a moment. I just want to say that we still, obviously we have more psukim to read, but we also still need to tie together the ideas of Yefes, who is the main nation over here that's represented, and Ham and Shem. And I encourage you this week in Parshas Noach to pay attention to the story of Noach getting uncovered in his tent and Shem and Yefes coming in to cover him up. Follow that story carefully, because that's going to tie into this, to what we're going to talk about next week. Yes?
When you mentioned Jewish people, that God will leave the nations and will come like darkness. This sounds like, what it sounded like to me is the concept of all the evil.
Right.
Is coming.
It's going to represent all the evil. That's correct.
Against
like a cloud of evil covering the land, coming towards the Jewish people. Right, exactly.